are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Peter Gorman. For nearly 25 years, Peter has worked with ayahuasca, the visionary vine and master plant teacher of the Amazon. While his work as a journalist has taken him from the streets of New York to the back alleys of Bombay, since 1984, Peter Gorman has made a point of spending at least 3 months annually in the jungle around Iquitos, Peru, and until recently, at least part of that time with his late teacher, the elderly curandero Julio Gerena. His new book is an amazing journey and adventure called Ayahuasca in My Blood, 25 Years of Medicine Dreaming. It's a wild ride, which I loved and can only describe as a cross between Indiana Jones meets Graham Hancock's Entangled. His website is at www.pgorman.com, and the others you can find off of there. So let's welcome Peter to the show now. Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me, Lance. I appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you because I'll tell you, when I read your book, I started it and I couldn't put it down. It was absolutely like riveting. It was riveting.
Nice. Nice. That was what was supposed to happen.
Well, you did a darn good job on it.
Good.
Maybe I know a lot of people are, are searching during these times of collapse and questioning. They're searching for various things, and a lot of my friends and people that I know are turning to ayahuasca and other mind-enhancing substances. Maybe we could begin with what it was like to live your life in the jungles and kind of give us a little, paint us a little picture, a visual panorama of your life there in Peru.
Well, okay. long story short, I love jungle. I love jungle in India. Mm-hmm. I love jungle in Mexico. I love jungle in Guatemala and Belize. And I was living with a woman, a wonderful, wonderful gal named Claire, who thought, oh, my God, Peter is probably bound for the Amazon. And that is going to kill him. So she found a book at she found an old book called Headhunters of the Amazon by Updegraff, written in 1906, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it was the story of a fellow from upstate New York who had an Ecuadorian college roommate. And the college roommate said, my dad owns gold mines in Ecuador. Why don't you come down and visit us? I'll pay for your airfare. This is 1895, 1896, boat fare or whatever. In any event, when Updegraff got there, there was an uprising among the natives, the indigenous, and Updegraff ended up spending several years traveling on the Rio Yavari, the border between Peru and Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And while the book was meant to shoo me away from the Amazon, it gave me a point of, I would love to see this no man's land.
Mm.
And I immediately began to make preparations. And the preparations were to go to Iquitos, Peru, from where I might be able to catch a boat to the headwaters of the Yavari, and then travel the Avari. In fact, that did not really happen.
Huh.
What happened was that I went with a couple of friends, and we ended up in some river towns in Peru and traveling with this guide for a little bit named Moises Torres Viana, who was brilliant and who unfortunately has had an accident where he's hit by a car and isn't really cognizant anymore, but he's still a great, great friend and still alive, but just not thinking clearly. Mm. And he said, I will take you out to the jungle, but you are going to commit to me as my student. Mm. And Moises would bring me out 30 days, 40 days, 50 days into the middle of the goddamn jungle. he would say, we're going to walk from Iquitos, Peru, to Brazil.
Wow.
On this path. And there is no path. We're going to make one.
Oh, my God.
He threw away all the food on the first trip and left me with, like, one tin of Nescafe instant coffee.
Oh, my God.
As, like, you either eat leaves or you don't. You can have a cup of coffee in the morning. So it was a wonderful, wonderful experiment over the course of several years to learn when you're in the middle of this, there is nothing on your side.
Oh, I can imagine.
You either learn to pick plants and leaves, burrow for fruit, eat insects, or you're not going to make it.
Or the insects eat you.
Well, we ate. There are now. There's an insect called Suri, which is, I don't know if your listeners live anywhere near Florida, where they have something called a June bug.
Oh, yeah,
It's like the hugest Japanese beetle you ever saw.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the larvae for that bug is called Suri.
Oh.
Suri is about a 2-inch earthworm. Now, it lives only in one place. It lives in the male of the aguaje tree. The aguaje tree is a tree that bears fruit, the females bear fruit that wild boar love.
Huh.
It needs to get pollinated by the male. But once it's been pollinated once, it never needs pollination again. And so women will cut down the males, which bear no fruit, and they will urinate. It's a spine tree. It's got 12-inch spines on it.
Uh-huh.
So it's a very delicate operation. They urinate on this tree, and the smell of the female urine attracts the insects, which lay their larvae inside. That larvae becomes 2-inch earthworms, or kind of like looking like earthworms, and that becomes your primary protein source in the middle of the jungle.
Oh, yummy.
You find those trees, and you knock on them, and...
Sounds like fun.
It's really not the life for most people.
No.
When you ask, what about my life down there? My life down there was learning things like women are urinating on trees to attract larvae, and that's protein. So this is it's really not a conventional. I went to a camp and had a great time for a month. No, my experience was not that.
Right. Right. In fact, you spent more years living like that in the natural habitat without any electricity or conveniences, learning from some of the oldest indigenous shamans that were around. In particular, your teacher or your the medicine man Julio, that plays a significant part in your book. Do you remember some of your first journeys and when you met him, and when did you feel like you were getting in touch with the spirit of the wilderness and of the plants?
On the first trip down to Peru, I was with two friends, and I was so sick of... My friends insisted that we go to the mountains and we go to the coast, etc. I'd convince them to go to Peru. And in return, they said, we'll go to the jungle, but first you got to do the mountains, you got to do Machu Picchu, walk the Inca Trail, etc. Yeah. By the time we got to the jungle, I was so sick of guides. We met a little fellow named Moises Torres Viana who said, I'll take you out to the jungle.
Oh.
I said, get out of here. We'll just catch a riverboat. We'll go up the river somewhere. We'll find a guide. We'll go in there. So we went up the river to a little town called Ricana. There was nothing there. No one would take us in the jungle. I mean, it didn't matter what we bribed them with. They were so afraid of Indians, snakes, crocodiles, jaguars. No one would take ghosts. They wouldn't take us out. When we arrived back at Iquitos, 12 days later or so, who was waiting for us except Moises Torres Viana, saying, now would you like to go to the jungle? And I said, no, we just been. He said, bullshit. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. He said, bullshit.
You can say anything you want.
Okay, you didn't. No one would take you out there. Now, would you like to go to the jungle? And we ended up going out with him for 3 days. During which time, we drank ayahuasca with a fellow named Alfonso. I'd never heard of it. None of us had. It was 1984. And there was no internet. And the Maqueda brothers had not written about it yet.
Right.
And it was totally blind to us. But Moises said, if you would like to learn about the jungle, you need to drink this drink. And we ended up drinking with a fellow named Alfonso. And I had an extraordinary experience where I associated with a bird, ate a fish, almost choked, swallowing the fish. I mean, my physical body was choking, swallowing the fish that the bird cut in half. And I thought, I need to do more of this, whatever the hell this is. So I came back the following year and did 30 days with Moises. And I thought I would go back to see this fellow, Alphonse. In fact, Alphonse, like a lot of people in the jungle, moved with the weather, and he was no longer there. Moises said, you're going to do 30 days in the jungle. Let me take you to this river you've never been on. There happens to be an old curandero there, and he'll give you ayahuasca. And then we'll go out for 30 days. And that's where I met Julio, who became my teacher for, I mean, I don't know, 200 or 300 times we drank ayahuasca together, and maybe, I mean, I don't know, I spent sometimes 2 weeks with him, sometimes a month, sometimes 3 days, but, I mean, every year I spent days and days and days with this fella, and when I got married, I spent with her and my kids and all that. This wonderful old curandero, who was the most humble little fisherman on the middle of a river, who was living on a pension for having been in 2 wars and been shot twice.
Wow.
And which, having been shot twice, gave him a pension of almost, let's say, $350 American a month. So he was, you know, although he suffered from the bullet wounds, he was supporting his, I knew 9 children. I've since met 3.
Wow.
So I knew 4 of his wives, 9 children, plus now 12, maybe 3 or 4 more. And he just happened to be the healer on a particular river called the Ocayacu. And we became fast, fast friends. Now, when I did ayahuasca, I didn't do it like, I think now, sometimes people think ayahuasca is a cure-all or ayahuasca will fix your life. I was never presented with that. I was presented with the idea that, Peter, if you would like to walk in the jungle for 30 days, you need to drink ayahuasca to put the jungle in your blood. And then on the way back, we drink ayahuasca again to clean you out. And so for me, I remember, this is almost 27 years ago, 28 years ago now. There was no literature on this. I mean, Marlene Dobkin de Rios had written a couple of things about it. But you really had to go to rare book libraries in New York City to find material on it. There was no net in this time.
Right.
So Richard Schultes, who later talked to me about having drunk ayahuasca, had never admitted it, and he was the ethnobotanist's ethnobotanist. I mean, he's, you know, the man. But until 1994, he had never admitted he ever drank the damn thing.
Wow.
So I was going in blind, and I just took it as, well, Moises says to walk 30 days in the jungle to be able to see snakes before they come out from under the tree.
Huh.
To avoid being spider bit.
Huh.
You need to drink this. This is good jungle medicine. Now, I later learned a whole lot more. But certainly, Julio, because he became a stopping off point for where we jump into the jungle.
Uh-huh.
And Moises and I spent years walking back and forth across the green hell.
Wow.
I mean, I really don't know if anyone's ever done as much hiking through the jungle as we did.
Wow.
I kept insisting there would be indigenous people in the jungle. Moises kept telling me, you're an idiot. People live on the river. They don't live in the jungle. Where are you going to get water?
Oh, right, right.
And I kept thinking, no, but they're hiding from modern life. I mean, whatever the heck my ideas were, they were crazy. But I made Moises walk me back and forth across that damn jungle every year, sometimes three times in 1 year. We'd hike 300-400 miles.
Wow.
In a month. We'd do 25 miles a day bushwhacking through the thickest damn jungle you ever saw. Both of us hacking with, you know, machetes, and it was crazy. It was insane.
Oh, man.
But at the beginning and end of each was Julio. And Julio would just laugh and say, you foolish, foolish boy. You don't know shit about nothing. How about tomorrow night you drink some of my medicine and learn a little something? And I would. And he taught me enormously without ever teaching me like a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
The medicine, if we're going to get into the ayahuasca, what's ayahuasca worth or the value, among other things, very quickly you learn everything in the world has a spirit. And the fact that I can't talk to a mountain isn't the mountain's fault. It's because my broadband isn't wide enough. And the best example I can give you is, imagine a dog whistle. You don't hear it. I don't hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Cats don't hear it.
Yeah.
But when you blow it, the dog will jump.
Yeah.
Which means it's there.
Yep.
Even though we don't hear it. Now imagine if you could drink jungle medicine, ayahuasca.
Right.
And you could suddenly broaden your spectrum of hearing.
Wow.
You would hear the dog whistle.
Hmm.
What would you see if you broaden your vision spectrum? We see greens, reds, right?
Wow.
But imagine if you could see the other colors. And that, to me, is what the medicine affords you. Now, you know, at the same time, once you've heard the dog whistle, once you've seen things that are not available to the human eye normally, those doors don't close. I've got a son who's 19. He lives with his mom just two miles away from me. She's my ex-wife, but we're still friends. And he lives behind her house in a small building because he refused to clean his room in my house. And I said, you can't keep peeing in a bottle, and I think it's I think it's juice, and I drink it, and it turns out it's your pee. I mean, I'm really fed up with this. The bathroom is two steps away. Okay, so I'm as human as they come, okay? I mean, that's a perfect example. But
yeah.
He said, fine. In that case, I'll go live with Mom. Because she would never drink yellow juice. And I'm like, yeah, but you put it in a bottle that's like apple juice. It looks like apple juice. I hate you. Exactly. And it, just like you, it was like, stop laughing. And he's like, you keep drinking my pee. So, in any event, he and I had a falling out, so he lives with his mom now. But now he drank with me when he was 14.
Oh, yeah, that's in your book, too, isn't it?
It's in my book. It's a story in my book, but it's a real story, and I think it's important for people to understand.
He
was born in the jungle. He was part of the jungle. It was. I wasn't trying to bring, like, a 14-year-old white kid to the middle of the jungle and say, drink this medicine.
Right.
No. I mean, we're talking about a jungle kid. He's an indigenous kid to begin with, you know? His mom's as indigenous as they come. And he'd been around that, and I adopted him because she had him before I met him. But, I mean, I got him when he was 3 years old, 4 years old.
Yeah.
So I had him young, but, I mean, he was from there.
Yeah.
And, you know, at some point, probably I think 13 or 14, he was with me with a small group out in the jungle, and he ate the breakfast on the day we're going to do medicine. I feed people breakfast, and I send them out for a long, very hard hike.
Yeah.
And they're not allowed to drink or eat anything for, like, from 9 in the morning until 9 at night, when it's time to start the ceremony. And if they walk 15 kilometers, 20 kilometers, so they are dehydrated, they are exhausted, there's nothing in their stomach.
Yeah.
At the same time, when they come back, there's a feast waiting in the kitchen.
Oh.
Those who want the feast can't drink the ayahuasca.
Oh.
Those who look at the feast and say, and then give it up.
Yeah.
They can drink. Because one of the main things with ayahuasca is vomiting.
Oh, yeah.
It's not about vomiting physical stuff. I mean, you could vomit Chinese food anytime you want. But when was the last time you were allowed to vomit the pain you had from a breakup with a girlfriend when you were 15 years old?
Oh, my.
When was the last time you were allowed to vomit up the pain you felt when your mother, at 2 months old, 4 months old, 6 months old, said, you have teeth. Could never have my breast again. And until that moment, you thought you were the best thing since Swiss cheese.
Right.
And then suddenly you got a tooth, and your mom says, ow, you hurt. Here's a pacifier. You're like,
right.
What happened to Mom? What the hell is this pacifier thing?
Yeah.
Well, so we want you to starve that day so you get to vomit up that pain.
Yeah.
Not the memory of that pain. The memory is good. The memory of the sins you committed, the memory of the sins people committed on you. It's good to remember, like, oh, man, I loved her so much. I loved him so much. I loved that dog so much. And then the dog ran out in the traffic, and I felt bad. Good. Remember that.
Right.
But don't carry around the actual pain from that.
Oh.
Vomit that up.
Oh.
Remember the memory so that you're alert in the present.
Mm-hmm.
But why do you want a sack on your back like a hunchback?
Right, right. Which is
you don't need that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been 18 years and you forgot what the hell the dog's name was.
Right.
So remember that you should keep dogs off the road. That's good memory.
Right.
Bad memory is, oh, Joey, you don't need that.
Right.
Get rid of that.
Exactly.
So that's what you're afforded to vomit with ayahuasca. So Lance, I'm sorry.
That's
where the hell did we start this?
Well, we're talking about what comes with the pain. The vomiting is an emotional cleansing that comes up when you first do the ayahuasca. Is it right?
Yes, and usually that will lead into the ayahuasca dream.
Oh, right. That's the part where the shaman, or, you know, you guide yourself through to another side of the spiritual realms, where you have different experiences, but many of them seem to be quite similar. Most of the people, don't they seem to describe a similar landscape or entities that are kind of waiting there, that are on the other side of that?
Well, there's a yes and no there.
All right.
The yes is, we are humans.
Right.
We've got very finite brains. We need to compartmentalize,
yeah,
or we cannot view things.
Right, right.
So let's say you see a car accident on the highway.
Uh-huh.
Boom. You have to put it into a frame that you can absorb.
Right, right.
And you might pass it and say, please, God, I hope nobody was hurt. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to compartmentalize that. Now imagine you see a spirit, which has no physical body. You have to put that into a shape you can deal with. So you might make it a clown, an angel, or something. But it's got to be something.
Right.
But the reality is this. You and I live in this 3, 4, 5, 12 dimensional world.
Right.
Now, if we use a medicine that will broaden our senses, like to allow us to hear the dog whistle, or to see spectrum further than our eyes can see,
right,
it's the equivalent, in my mind. Imagine there's a wall in front of you. Imagine in a moment that wall becomes a curtain and you pull it down.
Sounds
there
pretty
are
good
now
to me.
450 people living in that huge apartment building saying, holy shit, who the fuck is that looking at me having dinner? They're looking at you, you're looking at them.
Right, right.
And you're like, I didn't know I was doing that. Well, you drank ayahuasca that allowed you to do that. You did that DMT that allowed you to do that. You're like, well, to me, they become looky-loos.
Right.
They're just looking at you.
Huh.
They're like, who's looking at me? And so they come bobbing in and out of your space. And it's, you have to be able to give them a shape that you can accept, a shape that you can recognize. It could be a crazy clown, it could be a monkey, it could be a banana, it could be a tree, but you need something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your brain doesn't know how to deal with amorphous
energy
beings.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
I do.
You're looking at them, they're looking at you, and everybody's freaking the hell out. And everybody's jumping out of their skin. That's drinking ayahuasca. Like, oh, shit, did I pull down a curtain on an entire communist building?
Yeah.
And now I got 12,000 communist families looking at us capitalists.
Oh, my God.
And saying, well, we're actually eating lentils. And don't you eat lentils? And you're thinking, they're just communists. They don't eat anything. So we're kind of, you know, how do we deal with all this nonsense?
Yeah.
So when people say, oh, well, I saw this, I saw that, I think a lot of what people see is that we simply compartmentalize seeing spirits in a similar way. I also think that an awful lot of people were influenced by Terrence McKenna, who talked about machine elves.
Right.
And that was such an easy way to visualize some of these spirits that even if you didn't mean to, it's easy to say, oh, there they are, the machine elves. I don't think they're machine elves, and I don't think they are looky-loos. I think they're individual spirits.
Yeah.
When I And I know you know this, but, you know, if you want to talk to a mountain has been here from the beginning of time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the same moment, whatever the freak creation was, and I don't want to get into a religious discussion, but I mean, whatever the hell it was, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Somewhere along the line, humans were, we became humans. I don't know how,
right.
But somehow we did.
Right, it happened.
At the same
it
time,
happens.
Rocks look to have been rocks from the beginning of time.
Yeah.
They might have been part of an explosion of lava,
yeah,
a volcano, but how do humans relate to those rocks? How do we connect with them? How can you slow down enough?
Mm-hmm.
With your lifespan of 50, 60, 80 years,
mm-hmm,
how fast that is compared to something that was lava 2 billion years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And is now home to beautiful flowers.
Yeah.
2 billion years later. How slow is that moving compared to how fast you're moving? How do you relate to that? You better slow down a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or you're not going to be able to relate. And I think the medicine here is a medicine that will allow you, afford you,
mm-hmm,
just for a moment. If you want to do it for the rest of your life, you really have to work hard. But it will give you a glimpse of how to relate to the spirit of that rock.
Huh.
How to relate to the spirit of that building. How to relate to the spirit of that transmission in your car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, anyway.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, the indigenous tribes have been basically talking about that since the beginning of time. So it makes sense that we would be able to, in an altered state, be able to communicate with different time frames. The spirit of different elements or elementals that exist in a different, just in a different way than we do. We're not used to
it. And one of the issues that a lot of us deal with when thinking about, or, you know, indigenous tribes, is the idea that somehow we're kind of bred into the idea that we're better, we know more,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
And the answer, in the reality, is not everybody who talks indigenous, not everybody who walks that, you know,
yeah,
not everybody who talks that can walk that.
Right, right. That's right.
For a lot of people, it's a phony, you know, baloney thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's part of their culture, it's still not something they can do. So how do you come to be able to relate to that? I think it's a lot of work. Now, you don't need ayahuasca. I mean, certainly you could do it with meditation. You could do it with getting hit by lightning 12 times. probably you could do it if you drink enough beer. I don't know. You know, we all think we could do it if we drink enough beer.
Right.
at least until we forget what the hell happened last night. But, you know, but I'm not saying it doesn't happen with that. I'm just saying it's like, the reality is, there is a spirit in everything.
Yeah.
And there was an old Ute teacher of mine, Bertha Grove, who was beautiful and wonderful Ute medicine woman, who sucked out medicine from a boy during a peyote ceremony 25 years ago, third or fourth ceremony I was with her. And she said, "Did you see how I sucked that out?" Next morning, I said, "Yeah," I lied. He said, "No, you didn't. I sucked out his disease, but I didn't let it go in me."
Right.
Okay, what does that mean? Well, because his disease has the same life force you have and I have.
Right.
It wants to stay alive. If I let it get into me, it would become a disease for me.
Uh-huh.
So I caught it in my mouth, I spit it out, and I sent it to a planet that, no matter how long the future of the world is, will never be inhabited.
Huh.
I wrapped it up in white, you know, sacramental tissue, and sent it away. Said, if you just catch the disease and spit it out, it's on the floor, and now whoever walks next to that is going to step on it or near it, and it will catch them. And with this kid, it might have been a cold or meningitis, but it will stay alive and mutate into whatever the hell it needs to mutate to stay alive.
That's right, right? That makes sense. That makes sense.
And she was, like, very insistent. Peter, you have to learn how to eliminate these things. Now, I got lucky 20 years later and was shown a place that to me was described as a red room, like a big cavern, where doctors turned that negative energy into positive stuff. But my sister, who Bertha Grove, my sister was a healer. I don't mean that exotically. She was a acupuncturist. And she was also really cool because she designed the MTV logo. And was called by Time Magazine one of the top designers of the 20th century. And, you know, for that, and she's always been Sting's personal designer, et cetera, and Billy Idol's and a lot of people's. But she became an acupuncturist, and she began absorbing diseases. And on about maybe 4 years after I knew Bertha, she allowed me to bring my sister. And Bertha, when she talked about disease that day, called my sister over and said, Peter, your sister, look at her. Now, this is my older sister who doesn't pay attention to me, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, she'll tell all her friends I'm the greatest, but I'm still her baby brother. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know if you got older sisters, but, like, you're great for her friends, but you're not good enough for her.
Right.
So she was like, Peter, what's your friend saying? And I was saying, well, Bertha's saying, Patty, you have just absorbed like 2,000 diseases from different people with your acupuncture, and you don't know how to get rid of them, and you're going to die. And Patty laughed, and 4 months later, Patty got sick, and she's been sick for 25 years.
Wow.
I mean, sick. And she's got Chinese seeping stomach, even though she's not Chinese.
Wow.
And she has got she's got diseases that are so race-specific, it's ridiculous. But she's a white girl from Queens, New York, just like I'm a white boy from Queens, New York.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, but Bertha said, you got this shit all over you.
Wow.
You don't know how to get rid of it. We don't let it come into us. We catch it and throw it away.
Oh, my goodness.
You're catching it and letting it hit you.
Oh,
and I don't think Bertha convinced her to get sick because Patty really has not enjoyed it. But, you know, she's got so many race-specific diseases.
Jeez.
It really is just, I mean, I don't know. I guess sometimes talking about this, and Lance, I know you know this. I don't know if your audience knows this, but it's almost, it sounds ridiculous to talk about it to people who don't really understand disease or pain or spirit. And so here I'm talking about my sister, you know, catching or collecting other people's diseases. And I know that for a lot of people is like, what the hell is this guy talking about? But on the other hand, I also know, well, if you deal with diseases, if you deal with healing people, if you deal with stuff, you definitely understand all this. It's so clear. So maybe I'm just being, you know, I don't mean to be arrogant about talking about it as if people know, because I know people don't know, and I didn't know.
Right, right. And that makes perfect sense that, you know, these are living entities that have a form of consciousness, and everything wants to live, you know. And I know a lot of healers that do healing, and they have to use protection, and you know, like you said, it has to be, if a disease is removed, it has to be disposed of, you know, in the cosmic recycling bin where it belongs, and not just put out there where somebody else can stumble across it and pick it up. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere along the line, dog poop is going to make you slip on the sidewalk.
Right.
And you know darn well it's going to make you especially slip on the sidewalk on the day when you have a meeting.
Oh, yes.
Which can change your damn career.
Right.
And there you are, whoa, falling on your butt. And dog poop on your shoe, your pants got cut. Well, that's not even negative.
Right.
That's just normal.
Right.
And it'll ruin your life.
Right.
Imagine if someone could take your pneumonia.
Yeah.
Or your allergy.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking simple stuff. I'm not talking even complicated stuff. I'm talking, imagine you have heartache. Because, and I pray I'm not stepping on toes. Imagine if your mom died this week and you had pain from that. And please, God, I hope I didn't just say the wrong thing. But if you did, how much is your pain? And then if Bertha was there, you know?
Yeah.
Not me, but imagine Bertha Grove, the Ute elder.
Right.
Would look at you and say, Lance, you need to suffer through it, but this part of it, you're taking on yourself that's not yours. You could not have helped that.
Yeah.
Let me suck that part out of your head. Let me suck that part out of your soul. Because your mother still is gone. You're still going to feel that pain, but you didn't cause it.
Right.
And two more phone calls would not have changed it.
Yep.
So there's no reason you have the extra weight. And Bertha sucked that out of you.
Whoa.
This is what we're talking about. I mean, this is the level we're talking about. Now, what if Bertha took that angst into herself?
Oh. Well, it would.
Now, she would be living with the idea of two more phone calls could have saved my mom.
Oh, my goodness.
That would not have saved your frickin' mom.
Right.
Your mom got hit by a car. knock on wood, she didn't, but you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Two more phone calls wouldn't have done it.
Right.
She was sick. She was ill. So why? Bertha takes that pain into herself. That pain doesn't want to die. That pain's got its own life. She needs to eliminate that. And she needs to put it in a place where it won't hurt someone else.
Right.
Because it was your pain. It doesn't need to affect anyone else. And in the simple, when you vomit ayahuasca, you vomit that pain. Not the memory of losing your mom. That's vital. That's important.
Yeah.
Of course you still feel that. But the weight of, am I guilty? Am I this?
Am I that?
Right. Yeah. What good is that doing you? What good is that doing you?
Nothing.
Maybe if you were responsible, it would do good. But in real life, it's probably not doing you much good. You're just walking around like you want to kiss a girl, you want to kiss a boy, you want to kiss a dog, and you're like, oh, I'm not worthy.
Right.
I could have called my mom.
Right.
And so you're not living with the full extent. Well, yes, you lost your mom. Feel the pain. Accept it. But the guilt part, throw it away.
Throw it away. So the ayahuasca experience processes a lot of the unnecessary suffering that the baggage that we carry around. But now, if that's true, wouldn't that invisible energy that comes out of us, kind of like a negative spirit or a demonic kind of thing, wouldn't that go back onto the earth? I mean, doesn't it get recycled there, or what happens to it then?
Okay. Now, this is where drinking the ayahuasca with the right curandero.
Right.
Curandero means cure. Healer.
Okay. Right.
Curer. Curandero. We call them ayahuasqueros. We call them shaman. Shaman's from Tlingit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's Mike Horner back in 1958 or something, right? From the Russians.
Yeah.
From Siberia. That's just one particular group, and we've now expanded that. But in real life, it's curandero. Cure is a better word. Healer. Doctor. Doc.
Right.
You know. They know that when stuff is eliminated, it must be put somewhere. In my experience, now, everybody can do it on their own. They don't need a curandero. They can blah, blah, blah. But in my experience, I always drank with Julio or Roberto or Alberto or, you know, Airport One or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I always drank with curandero. These guys knew where to put that shit.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly.
And so I would throw it up. They didn't just leave it on the ground.
Right.
They didn't just say, like, 30-second rule, like we used to do in the kitchen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Drop the hamburger, 30 seconds! No, no, it never hit the ground.
Right.
If it did hit the ground, you got a problem tomorrow.
Yeah.
When one of the six people, I mean, in my own experience, when the curandero once in a while ends up not strong enough, you definitely have a problem if I've got seven or eight guests who are getting rid of some of this negative stuff, and some of it's disease-oriented, some of it's just plain negativity.
Right, right.
Like, I hate my sister.
Yeah.
I was the baby, but only for 1 year. And then she came along, and she was the baby.
Right.
Well, it sounds simple, but, I mean, this is the cause of more wars than we can imagine, right?
That's right, that's right.
And this is the stuff people carry around.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it really is. I mean, we don't even count it as important. But it really, really, really is important.
It is important.
It's what makes us, like, you know, I mean, in my own family, you know, Italo and Marco were like, Italo's the baby, but he's the oldest, right? So he was getting treated special, and he dealt with the fact that he's a younger brother. But he's the big, strong guy. And then 8 years later, Marco has a sister, Madalena. Marco suddenly started acting up like insanely. Because he's 8 years old, and he's no longer the baby. Now he's told, like, act up, motherfucker. Square up, you're a young man.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I can do anything I want, I'm the baby. You're not the baby, she's the baby. Then Madalena, 5 years later, has another baby. She's like, who's this bitch? I'm the baby. I get the big presents, not her. You know what I mean? It's just natural.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot. I mean, some of the stuff is so simple.
Yeah.
If we look at it in a simple way, we can extrapolate and make it work for our lives.
Right.
We just look at it the most simple way, like you were the baby, now you're not the baby. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, you were the boyfriend, now you're not the boyfriend. You were the girlfriend, now you're not the girlfriend. You were the big shot, now you're not the big shot.
Yeah, yeah.
We can extrapolate it all over the place.
Yeah.
But the answer is, you know, I mean, Julio never let a disease fall on the floor. Bertha Grove, a Southern Ute, working with peyote, never let a disease fall on the floor.
Wow.
And Julio's dead, and when I take people out to the woods, I don't let a disease fall on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not the curandero. Julio's son, Jairo, is.
Mm-hmm.
But Hiro is young. He's just 32, 33.
Wow.
And he's got 25 years experience, so I sometimes chip in and say, like, now between us we got 50, motherfucker.
Now, Julio, you knew him right up until his death, and in your book there's a very sad and riveting account about how he was attacked invisibly by some of the jealous ayahuasca
students.
His
own
right.
students. It was his own students, and I didn't want to name names, but I
right,
mean, yeah.
Right. We don't have to, you know. Do
there
that,
is a.
It's a very real thing, and he was, and you know, there were invisible darts, and he, you know, it's kind of like he was. They tried to take him down so they could get his power.
The belief in Peru, Ecuador, and Bolivia, probably in Brazil, but I don't know enough about Eastern Brazil, but certainly in Western Brazil, is that when the curandero dies, whoever is next to him collects his spirit aids.
Huh.
And so when a curandero is near death, even if it's natural, right, just from old age, I mean, you're 97 years old, you know, you're getting old, right?
Right.
So you're going to stop breathing sooner or later.
Right.
I mean, it's just the way life works.
Right.
But there is a belief, and it may be valid, that whoever is there when he dies collects his allies, his spirit helpers.
Right, right. The guides, the team, and so on and so forth.
And
whatever you want to call it.
Man, if you don't know this stuff, then it's hard to believe that there are allies. If you were Catholic, I would say the person could collect your guardian angels.
Okay.
If you were Jewish, I don't know what the term would be.
I don't know either.
I'm sorry, I'm just Catholic. But, I mean, guardian angels.
Right, right.
The
right.
ones who, when you go to step off the sidewalk, suddenly you, like, stop in mid-step, and you wonder, what the fuck did I stop for? Zoom, the bus comes by.
Right, right.
If you just stepped 1/2 second more.
Yep, you'd be dead.
You'd be dead.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, I guess that was my guardian angel, or whatever you want to call it. So right. I don't mean to be religious or religious specific. I'm just saying that's what you would call an ally.
Right.
That was the motherfucker that said, not one inch more.
Right.
You have a cramp in your leg. Oh,
yeah.
There's the bus. Motherfucker, how'd that happen? Well, now you cramp gone, so you can walk across the street. So, the belief in a lot of the ayahuasca world in South American third world is that anyone who's there at the moment of death gets to collect those spirit helpers.
Okay.
Even, and I have a hard time with this, if you're the one who killed the curandero.
Really?
As if they are the slaves of the curandero.
Oh. So it's
and
a
you
like,
get to grab the slaves.
I see.
In my experience, after 28 years and a lot of practice, I don't have any slaves.
Right.
I got 4 helpers.
Okay.
Julio gave me 3 of those 4.
Wow.
To say, like, help this idiot.
Right.
And they helped me a lot.
Wow.
I can't imagine them as my slaves.
So
I don't know how much more ayahuasca I would have to drink.
Yeah.
What deals with the devil or with God I would have to make to make them my slaves. But I certainly cannot imagine that anyone could hit me with negativity to prey on my cigarette smoking, to cause cancer, cause me to die, and then sit there and say, I'm grabbing you, man with the hat. I'm grabbing you, Sacha Vaquita. I'm grabbing you, Sierra Madre.
Yeah.
The Sierra Madre and the man with the hat and the Sacha Vaquita and the snake in my belly, they're not going with you if you mess with me. They're only here at the behest of Julio to begin with.
Right, right.
But the belief in Peru is that that does happen.
Well, that's isn't that a kind of a form of, I guess we could call it the dark black magic or the dark side of the force, so to speak, you know?
Well, or if I want to jump in here, and
yeah.
I apologize because I keep jumping in all over the place. Black magic is a tricky, tricky, tricky subject. There is a negativity, but it is certainly not black magic.
Okay. All
right. There is a power where if you just drink ayahuasca 20 or 30, 40 times, you might be able to walk into a club, look at a girl from behind, turn to your friend and say, watch this. And a girl from 30, 40 feet away who's never met you walks over to you and says, hi, I think you're really sexy.
Huh.
I'd love to give you money, and then you give me sex.
Okay.
That is very, very normal.
But that would be at the very lowest levels of...
But you got to say no to that.
Right, right, right.
You have to say no.
Because if you cross that line...
Once... Here's the deal.
Yeah.
Use it. Don't abuse it.
Yeah.
Or you lose it.
I like that one.
That's the power of the ayahuasca.
Yeah.
That's the power of dealing with spirits.
Yeah.
Or that's the power I know. Now, there's probably 12,000 other powers I don't know.
Right.
But I do know. I can't even say, hey, guys, give me some work. Give me another $2,000, $3,000 freelance job. I can't do that.
Right, right.
If I do it, I'm abusing it, I'm losing it.
Yep, yep, yep. But
I just simply say, keep the family safe. Make sure the family gets to eat.
Yeah.
I'll do whatever it takes. That's very different than saying, give me a $5,000 job.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
So,
right. A little sense.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just saying, in other words, use it, don't abuse it, or you lose it. These guys don't need to work with you. And when they do work with you, these spirits, they expect a lot in exchange.
Huh.
This is not like they had all the free time in the world.
Right, right.
They have their own world. They have their own life.
Huh.
And their own life does not include you until you intercede and interpose yourself, until you become an interloper.
Right.
And when you do, it's like, well, fine. But we don't know what bodies are like, so can we borrow your body for a couple of hours?
Oh.
You're like, well, we're just going to send like 500 spirits running through your body for a few minutes each to feel what it feels like to have a piece of strawberry or
right.
Turn on a stove or grab a behind or,
right.
or look in a mirror or shave or, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Scratch your ear.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, I'm going to put all the knives away. I'm going to call people. I'm going to get all my kids out of the house. I'm going to make this the most insulated place in the world, and I'm going to have three people here to not let me try out what it's like to cut my wrist 14 times.
Right.
Just
right.
In case one of these idiot spirits says, listen, hey, man, that looks so cool. I just wonder what that feels like.
Oh, yeah.
But if you don't give them that, you don't get anything in return.
Well, it does seem like a deal with...
It's a deal sort of with the devil.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, listen, Peter, it's been so interesting, we're just about out of time, and I wanted you to have a second to mention where people can find your websites and your book.
Please go to Amazon.com, look up Ayahuasca in My Blood, and you'll see four or five different issues. Buy the hardcover, because that's where I make the money, but otherwise, buy the regular one, and that would be great. My book, I think, is legitimate work of art. My website is pgorman.com, and that's probably all the time I have.
Wonderful. Well, Peter, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your lifetime experiences with us, and I loved your book. I couldn't put it down, and I highly recommend it. It was just an amazing journey. And you're a terrific writer, and it's a world that I'll never get to experience except through your experiences. So thank you very much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, Lance.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Best of luck.
And tomorrow, tell me where I can find this.
I will do that.
All righty.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye. Good night, everyone.